Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. I don't mean to be pushy, but you're voting this election, right? Okay, honestly, studies consistently show that public radio listeners are more likely as a group to vote, so I know my question is rhetorical. But what about all those people who don't vote or don't even register to vote? This is an exasperating conundrum that obsesses people like Jenny Wagner. She's president of the League of Women Voters for California, and she joins us in studio to talk about research the nonpartisan nonprofit has done on voter participation or lack thereof. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You found many common excuses serve as a kind of cover for substantive concerns about the process or their participation in it. Let's run down some of the concerns, and you can translate for us as we go.
I don't like the choices.
Well, when people say they don't like their choices, they often don't understand what their choices are. They need more information about their options.
My vote won't count.
That's a pretty common one. It's really that they feel that their opinion doesn't matter, that they aren't empowered.
It just takes too much time.
I have that problem too, actually. It's that you don't feel like you're ready to vote. You're worried that you'll make a mistake and you need more time. You need more information.
It's really inconvenient.
That often is to cover up that they're intimidated. Nobody likes to feel stupid or that they can't figure it out. So they really just need a little bit more help.
I was stunned by this particular finding. The most important predictor of whether 18 to 30-year-olds vote is if they grew up in a household with voters.
That's correct. You know, a lot of people assume, if they're voters, that other people have that same kind of experience growing up, that they were surrounded with people talking about voting so you know how it works, so that you know how you should do it. Basic things about how you research what you should vote for were never taught to them. So they don't learn, okay, this is how you register to vote. This is what happens the first time that you go to vote. No one took them to do that. And so there's a really basic level of explanation that needs to be happening in California right now.
And I suppose, too, there are households where people regularly talk about politics of all kinds, local, regional, national, all of it.
Exactly. That kind of personal relationship is the most influential way to get someone to vote. If someone you care about talks to you about voting, you're going to do it. You want to please them, you admire them, you're going to get out and participate. And it's kind of unfortunate that California isn't more of a swing state because often there's more energy and more attention placed on local and regional elections in that case. And so if you have a hotbed of activity, you're more likely to have people participating. So if you live in a community that has discussion groups and parades and people are talking about it and it's on the local news, then they're just more likely to feel excited and participate.
Well, it's interesting that you mention local news because I happen to know for a fact that journalists who are focused on local and regional news spend an awful lot of time and effort trying to interest potential voters in races and measures on the ballot. What are we doing wrong if we're not reaching so many people?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily that you're doing it wrong, but you're really focusing on the third of voters who are going to participate no matter what. They will hear absolutely nothing, and they will still seek it out, and they will go vote. But there's another two-thirds of voters that either never vote, they're not even registered, or they're registered, but they're not always participating. That two-thirds really needs to have more basic information. They need to hear, in particular, from people that they know and trust, why they should get engaged.
So you're saying it's not entirely our fault. People need to help out their friends and family members?
Yeah, you need to make voting personal. It shouldn't sound like something that only people dressed up in suits with higher education degrees can understand. And so finding ways that people can both feel comfortable with the voting process so that it's not like taking a test, so that they're not going to do it wrong and fail, so that they know that they can do it multiple times, that you can, you know, turn in your ballot and they'll give you another one if you make a mistake, or that you can bring notes and get help from friends, but that it's an accessible thing that they can figure out so that they can feel comfortable talking to their neighbors, to their people that they're in book groups with, really making it not just an intellectual process, but kind of a fun, personal one.
You say that, but you know, I find it a massive homework assignment that is kind of complicated and scary. And that's because a lot of the issues are complicated, if not necessarily scary. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know, in this day and age when so many things are made palatable to us and we have so many forms of entertainment, that folks just have an unreasonable expectation that participatory democracy should be easy.
Well, let me give you a couple examples of how you can make it much more fun and accessible. People picture elections as being people in suits and talking to each other, and certainly there's a place for that, or reading a formal newspaper. But the League has been working to partner with local community groups. So, for example, we've been working with a nonprofit called Yoga Votes. They found that within the yoga community, there's a lot of people who've distanced themselves from politics. They say, you know, I like how peaceful and centered I feel on the mat. And they didn't make the connection that if they're going to be thoughtful and trying to bring about change in themselves, they can also do that within their community.
That was Jenny Wagner, president of the League of Women Voters for California. We've got a lot more on the election. If you're doing some last-minute homework, you'll find it online at californiareport.org. And finally, today is the new deadline for federal Race to the Top applications from individual school districts around the country. Hurricane Sandy gave a handful of prospective applicants in California a little more time to negotiate with unions set against Race to the Top's requirement to use student test scores to evaluate teachers. Riverside Unified did manage to win union support, as did two districts in the Fresno area, Clovis and Sanger. Other school districts have thrown their hands up after weeks of charged negotiations, except for the LAUSD, which is throwing a Hail Mary pass, making what most consider an unlikely play for $40 million without backing from United Teachers Los Angeles. And that's the California Report for Friday, November 2nd, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, with additional engineering by Seal Muller and Howard Gelman. Sarah Bond and Nina Thorson directed the show. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White and David Marks. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor. We also had editorial help this week from Polly Stryker and Kat Snow. Our associate senior producer is Victoria Malleone. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com.